CBSI on the World. I'm John Batchelor. State of the Union. Ukraine crisis. China, the People's Republic of China. Xi Jinping running for a continuation of his general secretaryship of the Chinese Communist Party. The aggression in the Himalayas. The aggression in the South China Sea. The aggression in the Philippines. The aggression in Hong Kong, and especially the aggression in the Taiwan Strait. All of that is in front of us to be put together. Gordon Chang of at Gordon G. Chang is here, and we're very pleased to be joined by the author, Jonathan Ward, author of China's Vision of Victory. Jonathan, the suggestion here is if this was a work of fiction, a theater piece, the villain embraces the new boss in Asia prior to the athletic games that show the prowess of these enterprises. The villain goes back and launches his battalions against the innocent. The new boss in Asia learns. What does he learn? Good evening to you, Jonathan.
Good evening, John. What Xi Jinping is learning now is what it looks like for a major power to be under sanction by the West, for the global economy to turn full force against an aggressor state. And he wonders, of course, what are the consequences for him? And at the same time, what he's also learning is that the world may turn against Vladimir Putin in a matter of days, but they have been willing thus far to go along with Chinese genocide, with their crushing of Hong Kong, and with China's actions on various borders that have persisted at this point for years. So he's seeing also that China has a much freer pass in the world than Russia does. So that makes Russia an even more convenient partner. Russia can go and absorb the opprobrium of the world, and rightly so, while China can continue to pretend that it is playing just a secondary role.
So Russia becomes the North Korea of Europe. We can use it when we will to stir up trouble, but we're not responsible.
And John, that's exactly what Chinese foreign policy really is. I mean, you think about how they use other states. I mean, these aren't alliances the way we think of them. They're states that they're able to use in regions. So North Korea, useful against Japan and Northeast Asia. Pakistan, useful against India. And now Russia, useful against the United States and Europe.
Gordon, you have a question for our colleague.
Jonathan, I agree with you. There is perhaps another lesson here or something that may happen, and that is, as the world gets serious, because we've been unserious since the Cold War, very well, we might start to see China in a very different light, because it's been clear that China did greenlight this invasion, gave Putin all he needed for it. And so maybe we're also seeing the world look at China in a much darker view, tone. What do you think?
Well, Gordon, for those of us like yourself who've done so much to try and raise awareness in the United States and around the world as to the nature of the problems posed by China, you know, there is, I think, a moment here where one hopes that people will begin to see the world for what it is, will begin to see that we have major aggressors on the horizon, and at this point, really coming over the horizon towards us. So I think people have to make the connection between Russia and China. There are many, many people that still do not understand that. I mean, there are many people that are being fooled as we speak by Wang Yi and other Chinese diplomacies, sort of apparently distancing themselves from the context, from the conflict in diplomatic speak, even as China provides the fundamental economic offsets that allow Russia to do this. So it's very, very urgent, I think, that people understand that Russia and China are working together, that it's a combined problem in the depth of their military exercises, their economic engagement, and really their diplomacy, in a sense. I mean, it's not an accident that China's going out and sort of downplaying and soft pedaling things as Russia bombs Kharkiv and Kiev. So, you know, that is, I think, concerted. It is not a division between them, but many are fooled by things like this.
Jonathan, I want to go to the capitals of Europe because you've written about them and their opinion of Russia, their opinion of China. We can speak at great length about the partisan divide here about China, but in Europe, is there one or two opinions that compete for what to do with China now that Europe is awakened, now that the Germans are rearming, Jonathan? A major turn in the road for 21st century history. Does China now get another look from those who've been seeking trade?
Well, I think it has to, and I'm not sure we're there yet, but what has happened is that Europe is essentially united on the Russia issue, at least diplomatically. You know, when I was an Oxford student and I used to teach NATO officers through Oxford's military studies program, and we'd look at, you know, potential conflicts in the Baltics, we'd talk about Asia, and there was a wide range of opinions from European defense colleges and defense ministries in the room. And I think everybody in those circles understood the Russia problem early on, but China was still quite far away. And I'm hoping that with the past few years, I mean, China's own aggression in Hong Kong, I think, started to move the needle in Europe. But to understand the Russia problem fully, one has to understand the backing from Beijing. And unfortunately, things, as you can look at German foreign policy and say that they, up till this date, wanted essentially to sell cars to China and buy gas from Russia and be protected by NATO. That has to change, and that seems to be changing. But as we watch companies pull out of Russia from Europe, you know, European companies are pulling out too, so are American companies pausing things. Would they really do that in China if China were to go further? I mean, they haven't done it because of Hong Kong. They haven't done it because of Xinjiang. Would they do it because of an event in the Himalayas or Taiwan? That, I think, is still, we're not yet there.
Excellent question. Gordon?
So, Jonathan, on balance, is China more likely to strike one of its neighbors, India, Philippines, Japan, Taiwan, or is it less likely as of today?
Well, Gordon, as you know, as China's vision of victory points out, China has always been likely to strike one of its neighbors. I mean, China's 20th century history is entirely about striking its neighbors, whether India, whether the Soviet Union, whether the United States and United Nations forces in Korea, whether Vietnam, you name it. I mean, they struck all throughout the region throughout that history. And now you have a dictator, Xi Jinping, who, unlike Mao, has a very serious military to use. And he's made it absolutely clear that he intends to use it. And that's the message I've tried to bring to people in Vision of Victory and in other forums. So to see that ice broken in history, on the world stage, in the 21st century, and let's not forget, China used force against Indian troops in 2020 in the Himalayas in a more limited way. But to see a major conventional army attack a sovereign state, I mean, certainly that breaks norms that even Xi Jinping may have looked at as impediments. So I think the world became much more dangerous after the withdrawal from Afghanistan, certainly much more dangerous after Ukraine. And here we are with China as potentially round three. When that will come and how that will come is still to be seen. But I think the evidence has always been there that they intend to use force against their neighbors.
I think it's called a counterfactual. I'll try it. See if I get it right, Professor. China and Russia share a vast border. And in that part of Russia, there are very few people, and a lot of money, a lot of energy. Is this a normal occasion, this alliance, or are these adversaries looking to fight at some point in the 21st century?
John, I think they're united by opposing the United States. It's very much a 21st century, in a sense, Molotov-Ribbentrop pact. I mean, these are two dictators. I'm reminded of a Cold War, World War II era cartoon of Stalin and Hitler walking side by side with one arm around each other and the other arm, they each held a knife behind their back, ready to knife the other one in the back. I think that's today's Russia-China strategic partnership. The unlimited partnership is that they will knife each other in the back. They will do it while fighting the United States, maybe not militarily, but price gouging, you know, essentially exploiting, you know, China's going to exploit Russia because of this situation. Russia now depends on them economically, and they will exploit that. However, in the long run, it's just so important that America succeeds in this contest. You know, you do not want a world in which the Axis powers essentially prevail and of course, have their own Cold War. And that's a history that hopefully we will never have to see. We have to beat these two characters. I mean, they're joined. They're against us. They're working very cleverly against us, even though we're watching Russia have all kinds of difficulties in its military operation. I think the combined Russia-China effect is still very powerful.
Gordon, we have 30 seconds. Your thoughts about China and Russia as an alliance. Is that something that can be wedged apart? We have just a few seconds, Gordon.
It cannot be wedged apart in the immediate future. Maybe a century from now, as Jonathan points out. But what is important is the here and now. And in the here and now, China and Russia are working hand in glove. They may have daggers, but they're pointing them at us right now.
Gordon Chang, Jonathan Ward. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Nash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor,